Okay, good morning, and I want to begin by really expressing thanks to everyone who's been learning with us, Daf Hayomi. We all know the founder of the Daf Hayomi, Rav Meir Shapiro, when he gave that historic speech in August of 1923, proposing the Daf Hayomi program. So he quoted the story in the Gemara in the end of Maseches Yevamos. The Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, the Gemara has a discussion: if a husband goes missing, can we assume that he's dead and allow the wife to remarry, or do we have to worry that maybe he's hiding somewhere? So the Gemara makes a distinction about different bodies of water. Mayim she'ein lahem sof and mayim she'yesh lahem sof. A body of water where you see its ending and a body of water where you don't see the end. And the Gemara says if you can see the shore, and if you were watching for several hours and the husband didn't emerge, you can assume he didn't make it and the wife is free to marry. If it's water where you don't even see the end, you don't even know what happened. Who knows? Maybe he slipped away from behind you and he may have been picked up by a boat somewhere. So how could you permit the woman to marry? So Rabbi Akiva told a story. He said he himself was on a boat and he was shipwrecked. He went off of the boat. And everybody thought he died, but he survived. And when he survived, they asked him, how'd you survive? So he said, Daf Nizdamnali, a board came to me, a board from the boat. I held on to the board and I went up and down on the waves. And I was able to survive. So when you have the water where you don't see the end, you can see from Rabbi Akiva's own story that somebody might slip away and actually survive. So Meir Shapiro said, this world is a storm. And we start on a boat, and the boat crashes, and we're thrown off of the boat. But if the daf nizdamnali, if you hold on to the daf, not a board, but the page, the daily page of Gemara, and every day you hold on to that page, you can go up and down on the waves of the storm, and you can come to dry land. So I think certainly all of us, Masechet Shabbos, which coincided with a once-in-a-century experience, is a reminder that the daf nizdamnali, we get to the daf, we can hold on to it and go up and down, and it helps keep us sane, and it helps, gives us sustenance. So really a tremendous yashar koach for everyone who's been learning the daf, whether all the days or some of the days, it's all great. It's amazing. Every little piece is an amazing thing. And now we merit to learn the final daf here in Masechet Shabbos. And Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow morning, very exciting. We get to begin Maseches Erevin. We have all of our picture books ready. We're ready to start to see the diagrams of the high tension electric wires. And what is it that we need to do to make an Eruv to enable people to carry in a non-Rishus HaRabim in our days? Let's start again with the Mishnah on Kuf Nun Vavim and Beis, dealing with feeding animals. Says the Mishnah, Machatmas Adlun Lufnei Behema. On Shabbos, you can take butternut squash that was picked and was going to be used for people. And you can chop up the butternut squash in front of the animals. And that is, as we see, not everybody agrees to that. Some would say that that would be muktzah. Some would say it would be muktzah because since it was set aside for people, it wasn't intended for animals. And to use that which was set aside for one type of being, to use it for another being, on Shabbos and Yom Tov maybe is a problem of muktzah. But according to the Tanakhama, you're allowed to do it. Secondly, according to the Tanakhama, Vesanaveilufnei Klavim, you're allowed to take an animal, let's say a cow, that drops dead. Without a shechita, it dropped dead on Shabbos, it dropped dead on Yom Tov. So as Shabbos was entering during Bein HaShmashos, it was muktzah, it was out of mind, it was live. Now it's dead. You still had to cut it up in front of the dogs. Rav Yehuda Ben Yehuda says, no, him lo eisen avel me'erev Shabbos. If before Shabbos it was alive, so before Shabbos it was out of mind. So it was muktzah. And now on Shabbos it died, you're not allowed to chop it up. If it was in avela before Shabbos, then you'd be able to chop it up. But if it was not an avela before Shabbos, you're not allowed to chop it up. It's muktzah, it wasn't prepared for animal use. Itmar, we learned a famous argument. Amar Ulula said, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, who's Mr. Strict about Mukta. Even if something was dedicated for use, but it's dedicated for one use, you can't use it for a different use on Shabbos. Afrav Sabra Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rav also held like Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha is that we're strict on Mukta. There are many different types of Mukta. And something which is dedicated for one use, you can't move it for another use on Shabbos or Yom Tov. What was the proof that Rav held like Rabbi Yehuda? Midakrachi Dezuzi. As we mentioned yesterday, the mats that are put on top of merchandise on a merchant ship. People have mats on top of their barrels of pickles, on top of their garments that they're going to sell, the tarps. So those tarps, Rav said, you're not going to take them off on Shabbos and sit on them. Why? Because they were muktzah, they were put aside for merchandise, they're out of mind. So you can't use them as a chair. Shmuel, sorry, Shmuel allowed you to take those mats and sit on them. So Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon, who's lenient in regards to these questions of muktzah. Af Levi Savar, Levi also held Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. He's strict on muktzah. Ki had a Levi, like we know, that when Levi on Yom Tov would have to pass Kanshailas, Kevim Aisu Chifta Lekam maybe Yom Tov, when people would come with an animal that they had shechted on Yom Tov, you're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov. And they'd say, we're not sure if this animal has a hole in its lungs. Is this a hole? Is this hole really filled in? We're not sure. Lo avale, lo avachazale. Levi wouldn't say, okay, don't show it to me here. Ella ki yazav akil kalita. He would say, only show it to me when I'm next to the garbage dump. Why? Because if it turns out, Amar, he'd say, dimon lomas kasha. It'll turn out maybe that it's a treifa and it's not kosher. And if it's a treifa, it's mukta. And if it's mukta, it should just sit still. If you look love lo chaz, I don't even want to give it to the dogs. Because if it's mukta, if it's a treifa, then it's mukta, and I can't give it to the dogs. And therefore, I just want to drop it here in the garbage. You see, paskas like Rabbi Yehuda. That's something which is for people, the shechting of an animal for people. You can't now turn around and use it for animals, because it is mukta. Shmuel Amar Shmuel says, Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, he's lenient on mukta. If it's dedicated for a use, you can use it for other uses too. Ziri Savar Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Ziri also held Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, he's lenient on mukta. It's not as we learned in the Mishnah. Behema shemesa, an animal that drops dead. Lo yizizan b'mkoma. Now you can't move it. Tirkuma ziri b'behemas kachim. Ziri said that's only true about an animal that belongs to the Beit HaMikdash. Because an animal that belongs to the Beit HaMikdash, if it drops dead, no one's allowed to eat it. The dogs can't eat it. So it's mukta. Avol b'chulin. But if you have a regular animal that's not sacred, that drops dead, you can always give it to the dogs. So since you can give it to the dogs, it's not mukta. Shapir dami. After Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan also held this way. He held Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, unlike the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, unlike Rabbi Yehuda, I mean. He holds like Rabbi Shimon. And he says that we can be lenient on the questions of Muktzah. Ask the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Achi, is it possible to say that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Shimon that he's lenient on Muktzah? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, we have a rule throughout Shas. Rabbi Yochanan said, Halacha k'Stam Mishnah, that whenever Rabbi Yehuda Anasi writes a law in a Mishnah, and he doesn't say this is the view of Rabbi Meir, this is the view of Rabbi Yehuda, he just says the law. A Mishnah without an author, halacha is like that Mishnah. So we have many Stam Mishnayos like Rabbi Yehuda. It's not, for example, we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Neseches Beitza, Kufnan Zayin Amar Aleph now, a Mevakin Eitzim in Akoros. If somebody has a stack of construction beams, he has a whole pile of beams he's going to use to build his shul, to build his house, to add an addition to his house. He's not allowed on Yom Tov to go and start chipping away at those beams to get twigs for his fireplace. Why? Because the beams are mukta. They were put out of mind as Yom Tov began. Let's say you have a beam and it breaks on Yom Tov. So now it's mukta. It's useless. You can't take a twig from it. So you see a Stam Mishnah of mukta. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, it's lenient about mukta. Since it's permitted to use twigs, he would allow you to take twigs off of the beams. Answer the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan will tell you, that Mishnah is not a Stam Mishnah, he has a different text. According to his text, that's just the view of Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds like his father, Rabbi Yehuda, holds a mukta. But the halacha is, like Rabbi Shimon, that we're lenient in most cases of mukta. So, Hashma, maybe this is the proof about what the Stam Mishnah says. We have another Stam Mishnah. You're allowed to start taking out of a pile of animal feed. But you can't start taking twigs out of the wood that's in the woodshed that was put there before Yom Tov to be put out of mind. So you see that there is such a thing as Muktzah. Not like Rabbi Yehud, not like Rabbi Shimon is lenient. And again, there's no author to this Mishnah. It's a Stam Mishnah. Says the Gemara, no. Awesome, Bahar Ziva Ashuchi. Here it's talking about cedars. And the male cedar, the female cedar. Those are very expensive pieces of wood. So Muktzah Machmas Chisron Kis. They're put out of mind because their loss would be a major loss of money. And in that, I'll feel the Rabbi Shimon Moda. That even Rabbi Shimon agrees. There is Muktzah. Tashmak Amunir, proof we learned. In Mashkin Vishok, another Mishnah. Again in Beitza. In Mashkin Vishok, in Samit Barrios. We're not allowed to water and slaughter on Yom Tov wild animals. Animals that normally are out in, you know, you go out to your backyard here in Inglewood. You see a deer. You can't go and say, okay, I'm going to get that deer now for my Yom Tov. I'm going to go give it some water. I'm going to shecht it. Because that deer, you weren't thinking you were going to be able to use on Yom Tov. You thought, oh, it's who knows, it's going to be up in the mountains somewhere. But let's say you have a deer in your backyard, and it's trained. It's trained to go out and get food and come back. You're allowed to give it water, and you're allowed to shecht it, because you know you're expecting to use it on Yom Tov. So you see, like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is such a thing as Muktzah. We're strict with Muktzah. So Gemara says, all right, there is in fact a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yochanan normally rules like a Stam Mishnah. But nevertheless, in regards to Muktzah, Rabbi Yochanan ruled like Rabbi Shimon, because there's a Mishnah that Rabbi Yochanan felt was a proof that Allah is like Rabbi Shimon to be lenient on the questions of Muktzah. Rabbi Yochanan stamach mina ashkach. Rabbi Yochanan had a different authoritative text. And that's the Mishnah here in Masechta Shabbos. When you eat at the table and you leave, you know, garbage on the table. You ate your plum and you left the dirty peel of the plum or of the pomegranate or the seeds of the plum on the table. I say you can go with your hands and take with your hands off of the table bones and peels. Say no. You can take the board that's on top of the frame off Uminara and shake off the peels and the pits and the bones. So what's the argument here? This argument. If you hold of Muktzah, so you say you have to shake it off indirectly. If you don't hold of Muktzah, you can take it directly. Amar Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Nachman said, Anu ein lanu ela beishamai k'rabbi Yehuda. We have a different version of this Mishnah. In our version, beishamai say like Rabbi Yehuda, that you need to take off the plank and shake off the stuff. Beis Hillel are the ones who say that Rabbi Shimon, that you can go with your hands and take the peels and the pits and the stuff off of the table directly and throw it into the garbage. So if Beis Hillel are paskening like Rabbi Shimon, so that's halacha. Halacha is always like Beis Hillel. So then we know halacha is like Beis Hillel. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Now, what is the bottom line? Ligiba Rav Acha Ravina. Let's talk about later generations. Rav Acha and Ravina, they argued about this very question. Do we paskin like Rabbi Shimon in regards to Muktzah? Do we paskin like Rabbi Shimon in regards to all types of Muktzah? Chadam Rebuchal HaShabbos Kula, once in all of Hilchos Shabbos, the question of Davar Shein HaMeskavein, if you do something without intention, or if the question of Malacha Shein HaTzricha LeGufa, you did a Malacha, was not with the purposes different than the purposes of the Mishkan. So, Chadam once said, "Rechal Shabbos Kul and all of Rechal Shabbos." Halacha Rabbi Shimon, Halachas like Rabbi Shimon. Le'evar mi muktzah machmas mius, except for the one question of things that are out of mind, because they are abominable, because they're somewhat disgusting, a little bit disgusting. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if they're a little bit disgusting, they're already muktzah. According to Rabbi Shimon, if they're a little bit disgusting, they're not muktzah. So in regards to that, we pass like Rabbi Yehuda. If it's a little bit disgusting, it is muktzah. Mind you, it would be an example of something that's a little bit disgusting near Yashan, a lamp that you used once. If you use the lamp once, there's some soot, there's oil residue. So that is muktzah. A lamp that was used once, you didn't set it aside before Shabbos for use. You can't use it on Shabbos because it is muktzah. You can't use it as a paperweight. Chadamer once said, "B'muktzah machmas miyus nami." Even in regards to the issue of things that are a little bit disgusting, halacha could be Shimon, halacha could be Shimon, that it's not muktzah. Where would we say that there is muktza? Levad mi muktza machmas isur. If something was put out of mind, because there would be a prohibition in using it and moving it around. Maybe it would be an example. Ner shidliku babosa Shabbos. They lit a candle. They lit a candle, so now to move it around, it might go out. That would be machabes. You can't move it around because it might go out. It might be a malacha to put it out. So that's muktza. That's muktza. That's out of mind. You can't move it around on Shabbos. Av muktza machmas chesrom kiss. But if, as we said, the cedars, the expensive cedar shakes, the expensive things that are muktza, that are put out of mind because it's expensive, if there's a financial loss, afilu Rabbi Shimon moda. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees it's muktza and you can't move it around. It's not as good as the Mishnah. Kol hakel nitzal b'Shabbos. All utensils can be moved around on Shabbos. Chutz mi meser agadol, except for the very large saw. The carpenter has a huge saw to cut up the big logs of wood. It's very expensive. People don't want you to play around with that. You might break some of the little blades. So that's muktza or yased shel machresha. The stick that goes into the plow to get the plow on a certain furrow. They put a stick in it to guide the blade. That's, again, an expensive piece of machinery. An expensive piece of machinery that's put out of mind before Shabbos. Even according to Rabbi Shimon, it's fully out of mind. You can't say, oh, I want to start using this saw for permissible use. I'm going to use this big saw as a paperweight on Shabbos. That even Rabbi Shimon would agree. It was muktza, it was out of mind, and you can't use it in there. We do paskin of a muktza. All right, now going on to some other laws of Shabbos. Mefirin nedarim b'Shabbos. You know, there are two ways to reject a vow, a promise. A wife or a daughter. So they have certain responsibilities to the family. If a wife says, I take a vow that the kitchen to me is like Beit HaMikdash. I can't walk into the kitchen. So that's a big problem. What's going to be with the food for the kids? What's going to be with the food for the husband? So the husband comes home. Wife says, no, I couldn't prepare lunch today because the kitchen is Beit HaMikdash to me. He says, I reject that. So the husband has the right. He has the right to reject the vows that impact him. That's it. As the president says, he only has that day, the day he hears about it. After he heard about it, he was quiet. Then he's stuck. After 24 hours, the vow stands. But then you have the other option of how to remove a vow. It's not up to the husband or the father. And this is, you go to the Beit Din, you go to the court. The wife can go to the court a week later, and she can say, I didn't realize that making this vow was going to create shalom bayit issues. If I would have known it would have made shalom bayit issues, I wouldn't have made the vow. And the court can say, okay, you regret it. You didn't realize it. It wasn't done with full intention. It's all annulled. We paskin. It's mutter. What about on Shabbos? Can a husband reject vows on Shabbos? Does a court annul vows on Shabbos? Says the Mishnah Mefirin Nedarim b'Shabbos. Yes, a husband can reject a vow on Shabbos. Two, Nish'alon l'Nedarim Shein L'Tzarech HaShabbos. You can go to the court and the court can remove a vow that is about the needs of Shabbos. So let's say a person made a vow, he's not eating. Now he's not going to enjoy Shabbos. So let's say, I made a vow not to eat, but now I'm not going to be able to enjoy Shabbos. You can go to the court and they can remove the vow. All right, that's one law. Second law, poking us some more. You're allowed to fill in the window. Let's say you're worried there's going to be a dead body here. You see a person's dying in the street. If he dies right outside the window and there's a ledge between the window and the half the street, so then that ledge could be an ohel that could bring tumah into the house through the window. So you can fill the window. In fact, not only can you fill the window, you can even do measurements for a mitzvah. Let's say you're worried about the tumah coming into the house. You see a person dying in the street. He's going to die probably underneath this ledge, which is going to bring the tumah into the house. So you want to see what the clothing in the house, is it all going to become tameh? Modena samatlis, you can measure the rag to see that it's less than 3 fingers by 3 fingers and therefore unable to become tameh. Modena samikvah, and you're allowed to measure a mikvah to make sure that it has the right amount of water so that the person who goes in can become tzar. There was a story with the father of Rabbi Tzadok. And in the days of Abba Shol, the son of Butnis, they once closed up a window with an earthenware barrel. Then they took this other earthenware utensil, it's like a type of a little plate, like a saucer, and they tied it with a reed. They took reeds that had been cut, like maybe some fresh hemp. It was still moist, a reed, and they tied it. And they did this all, to see if there was in a barrel an opening of a tefach, in lav or not. And with the Ram Lamadim, from their event, we learned several laws. Number one, Shapokin, you're allowed to fill in a window with the barrel. Umodin, you're allowed to measure things, right? They were measuring to see if there was a tefach hole. And for a mitzvah, to see if the tumah would spread. And Vekoshin b'Shabbos, you're allowed to make knots on Shabbos when the knot is not going to last. We'll see in the Gemara. The Gemara will give us more explanations of what this story was. All right, starting with the beginning of the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about Hafaras Nedarim, a husband rejecting a vow. And it talks about Hataras Nedarim, a court annulling a vow. And it said a court can annul a vow when the vow impacts Shabbos. So Yibarlu had a question. How do we read the first part about rejecting vows? Is it that a husband can reject a vow whether the vow is about Shabbos or not? But the court annuls the vow only if it impacts Shabbos. Otherwise they say, no, we'll do it after Shabbos. And that's why the Mishnah talks about both rejecting vows and annulling vows, because they have different laws. Maybe rejecting a vow also. You can only reject a vow if the vow impacts Shabbos. If the vow does not impact Shabbos, you're not allowed to reject the vow. And the reason why the Mishnah lists these two cases separately, because the rejection of a vow doesn't need a court, it's just the husband. Whereas the annulment of a vow, ruling that the vow was made by mistake, needs a court. Tashma, come to your proof. Tani Zuti de Bei Rav Papa, Zuti in the yeshiva Rav Papa taught, Mefirin Nedarim b'Shabbos, Letzorech HaShabbos. His version of the Mishnah was, a husband can reject vows on Shabbos to enable keeping Shabbos. Which vows can be rejected? Only the vows that impact Shabbos. Letzorech HaShabbos in. That means he can reject the vows that impact Shabbos. Shalo Letzorech HaShabbos lo. He does not have the ability to reject the vows that do not impact Shabbos. All right, Lishna Achmina, different version. Ibailu had a question in the yeshiva. When the Mishnah said that a court will annul a vow that impacts Shabbos, Letzorech, when it talks about vows that are impactful to Shabbos, that's our Vayukah. That's referring to both. It's referring to both annulments and rejections. But a vow that was not for Shabbos, that not. Alma Faras Nedarim Eis L'Eis. That tells you that you could, right? If it's not impacting Shabbos, we're not letting the husband to do it. So how could we do that? Now, if he doesn't get to reject it on Shabbos, he's going to be stuck with it. So it must be, as Roger said, Hafaras Nedarim is Meis L'Eis. The husband actually has 24 hours from when he heard about it. So if he has 24 hours from when he heard about it, so then we can say, don't reject it on Shabbos if it doesn't impact Shabbos, because you'll still have time after Shabbos. He's not going to hear about it the first second that Shabbos started. He's going to hear about it within Shabbos at some point. So he'll have some time after Shabbos. You can reject it then. Oh, Dilmore, maybe Kikotani Litzorach, when the Mishnah says that you can annul vows if it impacts Shabbos. Ashelu diktani. That's referring to vows that that you're not rejecting, but you're annulling. Avala Farst and Zarim, but in regards to the husband's rejecting of vows, afilu shalol etzorech. Even if the vow doesn't impact Shabbos, he can reject it on Shabbos. Why? Because the time frame in which he has to reject the vow is just the day he heard of it. And if it's the day he heard it, if we're not going to let him reject it on Shabbos, he's going to be stuck with it for the rest of his life. So therefore, he can reject it on Shabbos, even though it doesn't impact Shabbos. Tashma, coming here, proof. Tani Rav Zutzi, Tebe Rav Papa. Rav Zutzi from the Yeshiva Rav Papa taught a different version of the Mishnah. May fear in Nedarim b'Shabbos, the Torah HaShabbos. Husbands can reject vows on Shabbos if the vows affect Shabbos. The Torah HaShabbos in. Only if they affect Shabbos. Lo Torah HaShabbos lo. If they don't affect Shabbos, then not. Alma, apparently, why? If it doesn't affect Shabbos, why can he not annul it? If we don't let him annul it now, he's never going to be able to annul it. The answer is no, he can reject it. Because as far as Nedarim is lays, that according to this Mishnah, you have 24 hours from when you heard your wife's vow to reject the vow. Since you have time after Shabbos to reject the vow, that's why on Shabbos you are not to reject the vow. Amar Ravashi, Ravashi said, we have a Mishnah that says you don't have 24 hours. The Mishnah says, Afaras Nedarim Kol Hayom, you have the day you heard it to reject the vow. Yesh B'davar L'Hakel U'Lachmir. This can create a leniency. This can create a stringency. Ketzad. Nadar Lele Shabbos. If a wife made a neder and the husband hears about it on Friday night, so made for Lele Shabbos, he can reject the vow on Friday night. V'yoma Shabbos, he can reject the vow on Shabbos day. Achetech Shach, until the end of Shabbos. But Nadarim Chashecha, if he hears about the vow right before Shabbos ends, he's stuck. Mayfair Achelotech Shach. He can only reject the vow till Shabbos will end. But once he didn't reject the vow and Shabbos ended, it's done. He can't reject the vow. That's against what you're saying. You're saying you have 24 hours. Here it's not 24 hours. It's the day you heard. It might only be 2 minutes of the day that you heard. Says the Gemara, this issue is Tanai. This is Machlokas Tanai. Meseches Nedarim. The Tanai is learned in a Braisa. Afaras Nedarim Kalayom. The Tanakama says you have the day you heard of it to reject the vow. Rabbi Yosef Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Amru, it's not the day you heard of it, it's much more than that. It's Me'es Leis, it's 24 hours from when you heard. All right, then the Mishnah said, V'nishalom l'nadarim. You can go to the Bet Din to have them annul a vow that impacts Shabbos, on Shabbos. He brought that a question, Kishaloy Elopnai, maybe this is only when you didn't have time on Friday to do it. Or maybe even if he had time on Friday to do it, he can do it on Shabbos too. Tashma Kamanir approved. The rabbis agreed to hear the case of Rav Zutra, the son of Rav Zera, the Sharalei Nidrei, and they annulled his vow. Even though he had time before Shabbos to go to them, and he didn't go to them before, they annulled it on Shabbos. Bitzafiach, and now a story. They filled in a window with a barrel. The kashrus was hamakedah b'gmi, and they tied this little saucepan with the gmi string. Gmi is a reed, a soft reed. And we learned from that all sorts of halachos. We learned from that story, you can fill in windows temporarily on Shabbos to try to prevent tumah from getting into a room. We learned from that story, you're allowed to measure on Shabbos for the sake of a mitzvah to figure out whether the holes are big enough for someone to get through them or not. And we learned you're allowed to make knots on Shabbos when the knots are not going to last, because we're talking about a reed. So the reed, as it dries out, the knot falls apart. This is what the story was. There was a little path between two houses. So the sides of the path were houses. In the houses, there were windows. The windows did not have glass or plastic inside. These were open holes in the walls. And they saw a person about to die walking down the path. He was breathing his last. So they wanted to protect what was in the house from becoming tummy. Now, for tumma to spread from a path into a house, you need to have a roof. If you have a roof over the path, then what happens is that the tumma rises, it hits the roof, and then it spreads from the roof into the open window. So what they had was gigis. They had a barrel cover that was over this path, I guess to provide some shade. But stuka, this barrel cover had a crack in it. Munachas al gaban, that was on top of the path. So what did they do? They said, we're worried that the guy's going to die. So they ran with the barrel, they put the barrel in the window. Then they went and they tied the saucepan to the gmi, and they went up onto the roof of the house, and they hung the saucepan through the string onto the hole in the barrel cover that was the roof over the path to see, is this hole big enough? Because if this hole is a tefach, because this saucepan apparently is a tefach, if this saucepan can go in and out of the hole, it's a tefach, then the tumah, even if the guy dies, the tumah is just going to go up through the hole of the tefach. It's never going to spread into the house. But if this hole is less than a tefach, then the tumah could be spreading to the house. Then the barrel that we put into the window is needed to stop the tumah from getting into the house. Upakwa sam arbitafiyah. They filled up the hole of the wall with the earthenware barrel. The kashra samakay the big meat. And they tied the saucepan with a string of a reed. Laydam yeshpagigis poseach tefach. To see if the barrel cover, which was serving as the roof over the path, had a hole the size of a tefach. Because if it would have the hole the size of a tefach, then all these preparations are unnecessary. Because anyway, the tumah is going to just fly up to the sky. Imlav, or maybe it doesn't have a hole of a tefach. If it doesn't, if its hole is smaller than a tefach, then the tumah gets blocked by this barrel cover, which is a shtickel canopy over the path. Then the tumah will spread into the hole, into the house. And then they had to put the barrel into the hole to prevent the tumah from getting in. So from their words we learned, shepokakin, you're allowed to put in a little temporary blockage into a window for the sake of a mitzvah, for sure. Umodatin, you can start measurements for the sake of a mitzvah to know about tumah or not. And even koshin b'shabbos, you can tie on Shabbos a knot that's not going to last. All right, we'll just begin first line here, and then we'll stop. So everybody's invited to the siyum tonight, here in the tent, after the later mincha and mariv, which is, I think, 7:45. So the siyum will be, what's the time? 7:35, okay. So siyum around 8 o'clock. Ula ikvula bei Reish Galusa. Ula once came to the house of the Reish Galusa. Chazi l'Rabba Bar Avuna d'yasev avna d'maya. He saw Rabba Bar Avuna sitting in a barrel of water, the Kamashachlei, and he was measuring its size. All right, so we'll have to see some more tonight. Thank you so much, everybody.